You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
All right, well, welcome, welcome. Sophie was one of my students at Calumet, and we would do this Fun Fact Friday every Friday, and I'd always, on Thursday, usually forget, and so I gave her my cell phone number, and I said, can you text me Thursday night and remind me to do Fun Fact Friday? She was very great administrator. All right, well, I'm not an expert. That's the first thing I want to let you know. I am just a normal parent like everyone else, kind of navigating through this daily. Didn't write any books or anything like that, but I did parent. And so I'm just going to pass on things that were helpful to me as a parent, and hopefully it'll be encouraging to you. This is our family. On the far left is our oldest, Michelle, and she married Tom. And then the middle is our middle daughter, Jenny, who married Tyler, who's the principal at Calumet, who's my boss. That was interesting. He's great, though. I enjoy being under him. And then our little grandson, who looks just like him, Calvin. He was born in August of this year. And then Daniel, our youngest, who just got married in December. They're all walking with God. They all love God. And I can't thank God enough for that. It's just like one of those things, you just don't know how it's going to turn out. And you're dependent on God to do it. And, you know, there's no guarantee, right? God was a perfect parent, and we all rebelled. So, you know, you could do your best and still your kids will choose. You know, they have a free will choice. So I'm super grateful to God what he did in our kids' lives. I feel like the last 2 or 3 years we've been in survival mode. How many feel like that? It's like reactionary. I can't imagine some of you birthed a child during a pandemic. How many birthed a child during a pandemic? Yeah. You probably wondered, is my husband going to be able to come in here? Am I going to be alone on this? You know, am I going to get visitors? No. Yeah, that had been probably quite the experience. Is my baby going to get COVID? And what's that going to look like? You know, there were so many things unknown. And then we came to that lockdown. Wow, we're all trapped in the house together. Benefits to that? Maybe dad was home that he normally wasn't. Or you were home and you were normally not. So, you know, there are some benefits to parenting on that, but you can go a little crazy. And isolation, that's a pretty popular thing during a pandemic. School, oh my gosh, I'm a teacher and we were on Zoom. And, you know, it was challenging as a junior high teacher. You know, I had people, some of the kids in their bed as they were doing school or in a hammock in their backyard, and I was like, wow, okay, we got to have some guidelines on how we do school on Zoom. But then I'd hear these preschool teachers telling me what it was like with preschoolers on Zoom, and I'm like, holy cow, I don't know how they did that. And let alone the parents at home, you've got three kids, two kids, whatever, in school, and you're sharing one computer, and how's that going to work? What a mess. And then there's probably experience of a lot of loss. You know, maybe people lost their job, maybe lost family members through the pandemic. So I feel like this last 2 or 3 years has been like we're trying to swim and keep our head above and reacting rather than being proactive. So I feel like it's easy to lose vision. And so we're here to kind of regain that vision so that we can be more proactive. I just read this book. Well, wait a minute. Without vision, we're going to see our job as a parent as a mundane job. You know, you think, I'm changing diapers, I'm doing naps, I'm doing this, and you're just going to get feeling like, what am I doing? You might see it as an under-challenging occupation, or you might feel like it's a frustration to real ministry or a hindrance to my life or career. And we might end up resenting our kids if we don't have vision. So vision is super important in order for us to be parents. I just read this book, Visioneering. I wish I would have read it a long time ago. but it's a great book by Andy Stanley about vision and how to gain a vision and then how to live out that vision. I have all the resources at the end, by the way. And this is what he says. He says, vision gives us a meaning to the mundane. He says, vision provides motivation. The mundane begins to matter. The daily routines, the chores of life, become a worthwhile means to a planned for end. I thought that was really helpful. Yeah, that's what we need as parents. Otherwise, we're just going to see what we're doing as a mundane job. He gives this illustration about dike builders. Don't know anything about that, but I thought it was a good illustration. He says, dike builders are a motivated bunch. Saving a town is enough to keep you working through the night, but just to fill bags of dirt for the sake of bag filling will leave you looking at your watch. And he says, find me a man or woman who lacks motivation, and I'll show you someone without, with little or no vision. So we need vision as parents. Vision also gives us direction. You know, we have a destination. You think about going on a vacation. You don't just like hop in the car and let's go. Where are we going? I don't know. We're just going to go on vacation. You got to have a direction, a destination. What are we heading toward? And he says, vision sets a direction for your lives. It serves as a roadmap. It simplifies decision making. You know, anything that moves us toward that realization of our vision gets a green light. Everything else is approached with caution. It also gives us focus. He says, vision will prioritize your values. A clear vision has the power to bring what's most important to the surface of your schedule and lifestyle. A clear vision helps weed out your life those things that stand in the way of achieving what matters most. That is really helpful. Without vision, good things will hinder you from achieving the best things. People without clear vision are easily distracted. I found that true in my own life. When I lost vision, I was like so distracted and I didn't know where I was going. It also gives us purpose. Vision translates into purpose. A vision gives you a reason to get up in the morning. If you don't show up, something important won't get done, accomplished. Suddenly you matter. You matter a lot. Without you, what could be, what should be, won't be. He says, a vision makes you an important link between current reality and the future. Vision gives you the momentum to move through the barriers not that otherwise would trip you up. So we need vision. But we don't just need any vision. You know, there's a lot of visions out there. You're probably overwhelmed with so many different opinions of how to parent that you got to have a vision that is from God. This is what he says. We're not our own. We've been bought with a price. That's from 1 Corinthians 6. Therefore, God needs to be directing our vision. Until we discover God's purpose and follow through on it, there will always be a hole in our soul. I was like, that is so true. You know, when you know that you are doing what God has called you to do and what you and you're at the center of his will, there's nothing more secure than that. You know you got the God in the universe on your side. He's with you, and you're doing exactly what he wants you to do. There's a lot of insufficient vision. You know, our vision could be, I'm going to make my children, my life, it's going to be all about them. That's going to be a problem, isn't it? It's going to make self-centered children. The world doesn't revolve around them. If we make our world revolve around them, that's what they're going to walk away with. Or live my life through my children. That's insufficient. You know, I didn't get to do these things, so I'm going to make sure my kids get to do those things. Well, some of that's good, but what if your kid doesn't want to do those things? It's like, are you going to force it? That's not that's an insufficient vision. Or maybe your vision is fear-based. Well, that could be very true this past 2 or 3 years. You know, we don't want our vision to be about fear. We want it to be about faith. Or we could be catching on to our culture's vision for our children, which is power and position. You know, you got to fight for that power. You got to fight to be the best at everything and competition or outward appearance. It's all about what you look like and how you behave or acquiring wealth and things. Those are all insufficient visions for parenting, because they're limited, they're temporal, they're not going to last. We want something that's going to last for eternity. And that we need God, we need his vision. Because he's all-knowing. We're not. You know, I don't know everything. My God knows everything about my child. He's also all-powerful, so he can do anything to encourage my kid. He created them. He created me. And his vision is much greater than mine. That's what it says in Isaiah 55. He says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth," that's pretty high, "so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." And so we need his vision for parenting. So we ask, okay, what's God's vision for parenting? Well, first, God values our children. He says that they are a gift and a reward. He says this in Psalm 127, "Children are a gift from the Lord." In this book by Chuck Swindoll, it's You and Your Child. I read this a long time ago when my kids were little. It was really helpful. He says the Hebrew word for gift means possession. Your children are God's possession, which he has entrusted to you. And then this book by Andrew Murray, he says, "God looks upon your child, my child, as his, and he has only been loaned to me to train. The child is indeed not mine, but the Lord's. Because I'm not naturally inclined, I am naturally inclined to forget this. I love and treat the child as if they were altogether mine. It's not only for God's sake, but for my child's sake that I give him to the Lord. The more I love my child, the more heartily I give him away to God. Nowhere can he be safe or happy except with him." So that's a perspective, you know, that maybe would definitely fight against seeing our kids as an obstacle or resenting them. They're also a reward. Now, this is interesting what he says about that. God begins a process at conception to design and construct a visual aid of the parent's love. That bundle of animation is given to the couple as a prize, a trophy, a reward of their love and trust. So our kids are a reward, a trophy, a gift. So I wanted to discuss for a little bit, how would viewing our children as a gift, a reward, and a loan to us from God impact our parenting?
I just immediately thought of the parable of the talents, where we're given, you know, this thing and we have to do something with it. And God is calling us to, you know, make it better than what he gave it.
Yeah, good. Very good. Yeah.
I know this might seem like a given with kids, but I don't think that it is. When something's given to you, you tend to treat it a lot more carefully and preciously and don't, you know, neglect it or harm it as much.
Yeah. Yeah, you treasure it. Especially a gift from the God of the universe. That's a pretty big gift. Good point.
Okay. I think especially the part about being on loan to us from God, when I think about that, it eases a lot of my fears because I realize, okay, my daughter is his and he's more concerned about her well-being than I am. And so I just need to ask him for everything that I'm fearful about. You know?
Yes, that is so true. And it just helps you like, take that burden off because we weren't meant to carry that ourselves. Good. All right, I'm going to come over here and back to you. We'll share. Yeah.
I feel like it could hopefully maybe give me some more patience for them. You know, just thinking about like, oh, this is like a gift that God has like perfectly constructed for me for a reason, you know? So when I see like the maybe more difficult parts of my children, I'm like, okay, but there's a reason for this. So yeah, maybe patience.
Yeah, good.
I was thinking yesterday about how discipleship is kind of similar to this. And a lot of us have been engaged in discipleship maybe before parenting, either being discipled or discipling someone else. And if you're meeting with someone else, you hopefully view it that way. Like, this is a person I get to meet with for a time, but the goal is that they eventually won't be meeting with me. They'll be doing it themselves. And you kind of view that as a privilege and this really exciting thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I think I was thinking about that in parenting, that when I let that slip, that's when things start to get weird, when I view it as this is a privilege and this a short, I only really have a time to do this.
Yeah.
It's helpful.
Yeah. Instead of these are mine forever. Yeah. Good. Why don't you go and then I'll
You kind of said this in summary to that point over there, but I think it could be easy to view it just as a duty. And so, like, I'm reporting to God about how well I'm doing here versus, like, this is a gift from God's love and a reward for me, and I get to enjoy these kids, and it's not just that I'm like, I better not screw this up, like, all the time.
Good. Yeah. So it's like you're not going to God to report, this is what I'm doing. It's like he's in it with us, and he's giving it to us for joy. Good. Although it doesn't feel like that when they're throwing temper tantrums and stuff. Go ahead.
I know for me, it really helped me to be able to shut out the noise and kind of get a healthy tunnel vision and it gave me the freedom to be able to get to know my children and enjoy them for who they are, and then make decisions based on their personalities and who they are, rather than what the advice people give or, and it a lot of freedom, a lot more enjoyment because of that.
Good. Awesome. There was, yes.
I, sorry, I was louder than I expected.
Maybe that's up.
My 2-year-old hurts my feelings a lot. And we had a lot of arguments yesterday, and I was telling him, when I was growing up, my mom always told me that the closer you got to people, the more you fought with them. So, you know, it just means I'm getting close to you and you're getting close to me, blah, blah, blah. But when I think about, like, him being, like, on alone, like, from God to me, it feels a little less personal. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not really rejecting me. He's rejecting if I'm in a good place, hopefully the truth of God, not just my sassy butt. And I don't know, that just kind of helps, because I feel like Amy had said it too, with like discipleship, I'm able to separate my feelings from people I'm studying with often, and so it, thinking about it that way really helps me to like shake off the hurt and be like, he is learning and he doesn't like the truth that I'm saying, and that's you know, that helps.
Yeah, good. All right, last one.
I have a friend who had a baby in March, and very shortly after, she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and she's probably only got a few days left to live, and so she's had very little time with her baby. And I was just fell asleep with my son the other night and just thinking, I don't want to just pass through the days. You know, it's just so easy to pass through the days, like, floating around, kind of, you know, not really applying our minds and our hearts. And, you know, we're not always going to have this kind of perspective, but I want to be engaged each day and be grateful for each day, because, yeah, we just really don't have guarantees on so many things. You already said that. So.
Yeah, good point. What a perspective. Yeah, so they're gifts. They're a reward, and they're on loan to us. Second thing, he gives us the most important job, teach them about him. We're to show our kids what God is like. That's a big responsibility, but we're in it with him. We got to remember that. It's in Deuteronomy 6 where God says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. These words which I'm commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons and shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise up." I mean, they didn't leave anything out there. It's like all the time, diligently, we're to teach about God. This book by Andrew Murray, he says, it was God's plan for the family, with its love and its training of the children, to reflect the fellowship of God's home and the love of the Father in heaven. Now, I counsel here as a pastoral counselor, and a lot of the people that come in was not raised in a Christian home, and their view of God is so damaged by that, because they you know, God put us in a family for a purpose, and we don't follow that purpose of showing who God is, it does make an impact on our kids, you know, that they will not know who God is, that they won't know he's loving. I know that happened to me. My dad left when I was 4, so how did I view God? God's going to leave me. He's going to abandon me. And so we have such an important role. He says, If this is your desire, look to God as the author of your family life and count on him to give you all that is needed to make it what it should be. Yeah, that's a promise. This book, because I was raised in a, I was not raised in a Christian home, I was raised in a moral home. We definitely had morals, but my mom didn't start, my dad left when I was four. My mom didn't become a Christian until I was in junior high. And so I didn't know what a Christian family was supposed to be about, you know, I was clueless. So this book was super helpful, What is a Family by Edith Schaefer. She says, the truth of the existence and the character of God is to be made known to the children and the children's children. We are responsible for them to know the wonder of who God is, what God has done, what God has said, and what he has meant to those doing the telling. This is what we're passing on to our kids. And it's not, that's our responsibility. It's not the schools, not the churches. They are great support, but we are responsible to show who God is to our kids. So what's our aim? I like how Paul says, I don't like to run. I'm not like a man that runs aimlessly. And I don't fight like a man beating the air. You know, we want to hit the target. We want to know, what are we aiming for? Where are we going with this? And this book, Revolutionary Parenting by Barna, he's a researcher, so it's all based on research. He interviewed kids that were called spiritual champions, which I'll tell you what that is in a minute. And he interviewed the parents that raised these kids, and he lists then all these different things that was common among kids that are walking with God. And this is what a spiritual champion is. A spiritual champion is an irrepressible, that means not able to be restrained, follower of Jesus Christ, who accepts the Bible as truth, lives by its principles, seeks ways to impact the world, and continually deepens his or her relationship with God. That's what we're aiming for. It's a big call, isn't it? This is why we need God in our life. And it goes along with Scripture, you know. What are the two greatest commandments? Love the Lord God and love others. He says that in Matthew. And so, yeah, this is what we're aiming for with our kids. This book, A Mother's Heart by Jean Fleming, was another book I read early on that was very visionary. She was a missionary, so she had ministry. A lot of these parenting books that are Christian oftentimes don't talk a bit about ministry. And so she had that spot on. And she said, we must recognize that God has a purpose for the family. The Christian family is not an island. It's not intended to be an end in itself, but rather a means to a greater end. God wants the Christian family involved in his purpose and plan. And so you kind of see your family, we're a team. Our family's a team that is working in God's plan. So it's something bigger than us, which is really exciting. In What is a Family, Edith Schaefer says, there's nothing that is more helpful for your own children than they're becoming involved in compassion for people. There's nothing more beneficial for your children than discovering how exciting it is to know that someone has passed from darkness to light because of the time spent in your home. She says, to find that happiness really comes in the midst of seeing someone else helped, especially if helped to find eternal life, as well as to begin to have a changed life, teaches the whole family what life is all about, how we are part of God's plan. How do we do this? Well, yeah, there's no strategy. There's no simple, do this, do that, and then you're done. That's what Barna says. He says, God has designed every human being as a unique individual, eliminating the possibility of effective one-size-fits-all parenting strategy. I think God did this on purpose, that your kids, there is no other kid in the universe like your child. Unique. So could we parent the same way? I mean, you know, if you have more than one child, they're not the same, and you can't parent them the same. And so what does that make us do? Well, we could panic, we could get overwhelmed, or we could go to God, because he knows them, and he will direct us. So I'm just going to pass on some principles that helped me as I parented. That's, yeah, Jenny and Michelle, some person in our home church gave them Lion King pajamas, which meant so much. I mean, they wore those until they were like holes in the knees and everything, because we used to play this game called Lion King. And, you know, one of them was Nala and one of them was, you know, and I usually had to be Mufasa or whoever. Anyway, I don't know why I told you that, but it just, every time I see that picture, I think of that. All right, so the first thing is it must begin with me. What do you mean? Well, in Deuteronomy, after giving that command, he says, "These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart." So it's got to start with us. You know, you think about it, if we want our kids to be spiritual champions, we got to be a spiritual champion. He says in Chuck Swindoll's book, "Before God reveals his wisdom and training on children, he reveals himself and draws the parents to him." So maybe you're here as a guest and you know, maybe you don't know anything about God or you know, you don't have him in your life. I would highly recommend you check out who God is, because he created you, he created your child, and he is the best being that you could go to get help in parenting. And he's drawing you to him. He wants a relationship with you. In Barna's book, he said, "One of the essential child-rearing behaviors identified by the parents of spiritual champions and confirmed as critically important by the spiritual champions themselves," said this, "was the modeling of the principles upheld by the parents." So it's that values are caught, not taught. You know, you could talk until you're blue in the face, but if it's not in your life, they're going to see that. They're observing. They're watching you, 24/7 watching you. That can be scary, but it's challenging. So we got to think, am I being a spiritual champion? Am I an unrestrained follower of Jesus Christ? Do I value his word? You know, that, I think, is a huge challenge when you are, especially a nursing mom, okay? You know, they say, you're feeding every 3 hours or 2 hours or whatever. Oh, yeah, right. There's not a three-hour block between the feeding. It's like you're feeding for an hour and a half, and then you get maybe a half an hour or an hour, right? So how do you get God's word in there? You know, you have to be creative about it. God understands it, though. He knows. He knows you're sleep-deprived. He's going to work with you. So, but we need to still have that value and fight for that. Am I seeking to impact this world? Am I growing in my relationship with God? I think parenting really makes you go to him a lot. So this is by a guy named Tim Kimmel. He says, "Some kids see their parents treating faith like a hobby, so they follow suit. We know that children's perceptions of their parents' religious beliefs and the accuracy of these perceptions influence the acceptance of these beliefs." So it just reiterates, this is why kids leave God, is because they're not seeing it in their family, and they need to see that in their parents. So that should be encouraging to you. Even if you don't know the end result, if you're getting your time with God and you're seeking his will and seeking to grow closer to him and doing what he calls you to do, you are at the center of his will, and you should be encouraged by that. All right, second thing, train up your child. This verse is misapplied in so many ways. Oftentimes this is given to people like, you know, it's guaranteed that your child will follow God or he'll come back. And that's not what this verse is saying. Train up is referring to the palate. And you're like, what? The palate? What does that have to do with anything? Well, back in the day, midwives would try and get the baby to start to learn how to suck. And so they would put their finger in ground up or mashed dates and put it in their mouth to encourage the sucking. So it's like creating a thirst for something. So that's what that train-up means. Swindoll says, "The parent is to create a thirst for the nourishing flow of the parent's wisdom and counsel." So we're trying to get your kid, you know, to thirst for what you have to say or what you want to teach them. So how are you going to win your child's ear? He says in his book, anyone, this is Swindoll, anyone resents run through anyone resents being run through an impersonal curriculum and revolts against being treated as a non-person. You know, no one wants to be treated like a project. At the center of their being, children want to be known intimately and genuinely. So here's another discussion question. What are practical things we can do to create a thirst in our children for our wisdom and counsel?
I think one thing that's helpful is limiting how often you say no to something. As hard as that is, you know, I find myself saying no to things that are to my almost two-year-old that, like, I can just clean up later. He can help me clean it up. Mm-hmm. It's not a big deal if he empties this everywhere and rips apart stuff that shouldn't be ripped apart. But if you're selective in what you say no to, then it's going to mean more, and they're going to value your judgment there more.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, being thinking about saying no to for the good of them, rather than because it's convenient for me. Yeah, it's good.
I think one way to create a thirst in our children for our wisdom and counsel is to let them fail. So if we're, you know, like helicopter parenting and trying to control every aspect and, you know, dictate every decision, then they're probably not going to want our input. But if we let them fail and realize that they need input, they might be more likely to seek it.
Yeah, if we're constantly rescuing our kids, that's not going to be helpful. Good.
Yeah, I was thinking, like, not shying away from, like, their strong emotions or maybe their crazy questions, that sort of things. I've definitely noticed that, like, as my oldest gets older and some of the questions that she asks me about sexuality and that sort of stuff, I've learned that, like, when I just let her talk through what she's experiencing at either school or whatever, I get so much more information, and then she's willing to, like, continue to breach those topics and ask, Mom, how should I handle this? Yeah. So I think just like rolling, or maybe like riding the roller coaster of their really intense emotions.
Instead of reacting.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of reacting to those roller coaster. Yes. Hard to do. Easier said than done, but yes, very true. Yeah.
One thing that came to mind for me was carving out time with my kids, even if it's just like a 15-minute walk home from school or something, when I don't have my phone out, you know, when we have each other's attention. Like, it's not always the deepest conversation, but it opens up space to have those kind of conversations. So I have three kids, so it's hard to find those little windows, but when I do, it's really sweet.
Yeah, very true. Getting time with your kids is so key. Yeah, that, because then they're going to feel valued, and then they'll, you know, like, oh, she loves me.
I wonder if also demonstrating humility to just kind of show them that we are people that can be approached, and that when we fail, we can tell them that and we can ask for their forgiveness, and
so
kind of building that trust with them as fellow sinners.
Yeah. Yes, being able to admit that we were wrong, that we, you know, and ask for their forgiveness, very humbling to do, but boy, I remember having to ask my kids forgiveness. Nothing is more humbling. But they're so, you know, they're so willing to forgive you. Yeah, that's great. I liked what,
just a small practical thing that might be helpful. I think just like, asking them, like, what do you think we should do? And kind of, like, create this norm of, like, we ask each other, and, like, even saying, like, I wonder maybe we should ask God what we should do in this situation, and just making it a normal part of your everyday language.
Yes. Good. Well, the Campbell, I forget his first name. I always want to say Lee Campbell, but it's not. in his book, Love Language, he says, you know, when we are spending that time and we're focused, phones off, whatever, and you're able to look at your child and listen to them and talk to them, that you're depositing into their love bank. And, you know, you're going to have to take some withdrawals at some point when, you know, you have to discipline, or when you have to, you know, when they hit teens, there's a lot of withdrawal. And because you got to set up boundaries, or, you know, whatever. And even as a little kid, you got to set up boundaries. So if that tank is empty, it's going to make a huge negative impact. So you got to keep giving your kids that kind of attention, the love that they need, and discipline, and filling their bank. I thought that was a real helpful thing. So the verse goes on. So we're to create this thirst, but then in the way he should go is according to his way. Because remember, he is unique. He or she is a unique. There's no one else in this whole entire world, or will be, like your child. And so this isn't according to my way that I want him to be. This isn't according to the other sibling. This isn't according like your neighbor or your friend's kids that you compare to and say, why isn't my kid like that? This is his way. And that was really impactful for me, because I'm a man pleaser at heart. And that's the battle that I always had to try and fight. And to see my friends have different children than me, and, you know, I start comparing, like, am I doing the wrong thing? And, you know, you got to just look that your child is unique, and God knows who that child is, and he's going to help you train according to his way. And that's talking about characteristics and manner. You know, what are they like? And he goes on to say, if you want your training to be meaningful and wise, be observant and discover your child's way and adopt your training accordingly. He's coined in the image of God, and so the child bears a certain imprint of the divinity. So they have a bent toward good. And, you know, I think about my kids when Michelle, when she was little, she would have all her toys in the kitchen, and then I would leave the room and come back, and she would have lined them all up. And I was like, what kid does that? Line up all, well, she's an administrator. She's an organizer. So I was like, that's a good bent. Maybe she can help me organize. And then, you know, I think about Jenny. One time we were at the grocery store, and the cashier said, looking at me, I see you brought your boss with you. I was like, Jenny is bossy, but that's leadership, you know, on the flip side. That, and I should focus on that. And then Daniel, he, like when he was, I think, 4 or 5, he'd get the Legos out. He would spend hours putting together Legos, taking them up apart. He'd look at the picture, figure out how to do it. And I was like, whoa, I would never have done that as a 4-year-old. I wouldn't have spent an hour or, you know, hours on that. He's an engineer. Figure that one out. So you see what you watch your children, and you see what they, you know, there's a good bent in there. But then there's also this evil bent, because they are sinners. They have the sin nature like all of us. And I love this quote from Swindoll. He says, you have to instruct your kids to tell the truth, but you never have to sit them down and teach them how to lie. It's like, no, they automatically do that. They automatically steal, lie, whatever. So, you know, they have that bent, and we need to be aware of that bent. He says, if you fail to understand this bent toward evil, you will fail to understand the spiritual battle in general and your child in particular. Because, you know, our enemy, God's enemy, is going to be really focused on that bent and really wanting to encourage that bent. So we got to fight against that. But they also have a particular or a specific bent toward evil passed down from our family. Our children have a specific bent toward evil which is inherited from their immediate family. Like, it could be stealing, it could be lying, it could be sexual immorality, I don't know. Some bent, negativity, some bent has been passed on, and we need to be aware. And that's where we need to be self-aware of, what is my bent that I don't want to pass on to them, but have passed on to them, inherited, and work against. Think about the Bible's example, Abraham telling his wife, Sarah, to lie and say, you're my sister. Well, isn't that interesting? Their next son, Isaac, lied to Rebekah. It said to Rebekah, you tell them you're my sister. And then, you know, they had Jacob, who was called the supplanter. the usurper. He was like the deceptive one of all. He had 12 sons, and they sold Joseph into slavery and lied to the dad, saying that, you know, he was eaten by animals. So, you know, we have this bent, so we got to be aware of that. There's this thing that Swindoll, and I have copies of it here, that Joe and I sat down and did this, and it was really helpful, where for each kid, you're figuring out what is their good bent, what's their bad bent, you know, and then you use that to help you in your training, your child. So I've got copies for you. What would be some negative fallout if you didn't know your child's bents? Whether it's a good bent or an evil bent. Yeah.
Well, my kids are two, so I feel like they're, you know, I'm just starting to kind of figure these things mm-hmm. out. And I've already noticed, like, with one of them, I feel like it's more clear. And so it's like I know I'm figuring out how to more effectively discipline mm-hmm. those issues. But then the other, it's not as clear. And I'm realizing, oh, man, he's just getting away with, like, so many things. And I'm having a much harder time figuring out how to, like, effectively discipline, because I'll just default and do the same thing that I would do for the other child mm-hmm. if it's, like, clearly not effective. Mm-hmm. So, I think it just, if you don't know, then you're going to be kind of training and disciplining possibly, like, ineffectively, because that whole point of you kind of need to tailor it to differently to each child.
Exactly. Yeah, like, my oldest was very shy, and so she loved timeouts, you know. She wanted to be by herself. Whereas my middle wanted to be out there for everyone to see, and so a timeout was very effective to her. Yeah, good point.
I think we can't pray for what we don't know to pray for, and like ultimately change in these areas is going to come through like God's work on their hearts, and so we need to actively pray about these negative and positive bents for them.
Perfect. Yes, because God knows they have these bents, and he's going to help them realize it and help us in training. Good.
I was thinking that I was thinking about the negative versus positive bents, and I feel like for most of us, we naturally are drawn to seeing one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So we may be more prone to see the positives and praise them and whatever, but then not see the negatives or vice versa, and that could really skew how we parent the child.
Good.
And also I was thinking too, like, that would just impact our humility, whether it means like hearing from another parent or our spouse about something we're not seeing, or not seeing our own sin in our kid and not being able to like humbly admit even our own problems to our kids, whatever that may be. So
good point.
Yeah, just that lack of humility and lack of discernment, I think, would be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, it will come up with, especially when your kids are with other kids and the parents come to you and say, do you know what your child did? I mean, that happens so many times. It's like, what did they do? I'm sorry. Yeah, good point.
I think not only does it affect, like, your kids' perception of themselves, because if you don't know where they're bent, positive or negative, they are going to have a harder time at a younger age developing that self-awareness. But I think if you have multiple kids, too, this comparison game is so easy among friends, but especially among siblings. And I think about that with my siblings of, like, my grandparents being like, oh, you're the perfect child, and then your siblings are this, that, or the other thing, and how damaging that was to them, but also to me, because then it led to this perception that I had to meet the standard.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that if there isn't a realistic picture of both the positive and negative, it creates harm in those relationships that are meant to be so close and intimate.
Good point. Well said. Yeah, last one.
My oldest is definitely prone to being a people pleaser and wanting to hide her sin and, you know, just not owning up to things. And so in some ways it feels easier to parent because I'm like, oh, you're not misbehaving like the other one is. but I've also found that it's a real opportunity to show grace. And so I feel like if I wasn't kind of like, hey, you still have some things going on here, I think I could miss the opportunity. Like I asked her the one day, do you know that I still love you when you whine? And she was like, no. And I was like, oh, good Lord. I thought I was teaching that. But, you know, it's just
good
really
question.
Able to be like, hey, this is kind of like she was saying, there's a mixed bag here. There's some positives in this, but there's also some pieces that we can really look at.
Yeah, good. Good point. Awesome. Well, here's the last one. Keep God in the picture. That was a constant thing that I had to keep going back to, and going to God on daily. Help me, help me, help me. He says, Murray says, God watches over each family with tender interest and gives his own father love to every parent who desires to minister for his holy purpose. That is a promise. He is there for you. He says, look to God as the author of your family and family life and count on him to give you all that is needed to make it what it should be. Let his father heart and his father love be your security. As you trust in his adoring love, the assurance will grow that he will enable you to make your home the bright reflection of his own. And he is so faithful in that. In Psalm 127, which we started with, where, you know, there are gifts and a reward. This is how that psalm starts out. Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the guards stand watch in vain. He says, in vain you rise early and stay up late, toiling for food to eat. For while they sleep, he provides. God provides for us even in our sleep. Have you ever had that where you're like, you're working on a teaching or something, and you just can't come up with my main point, and you're just like, and you just go take a nap, or you go to bed or whatever, and the next morning, it's there. Well, he worked on you overnight. And he can do that with our kids. Hopefully I can get through this. My mom died in 2016. She became a believer when I was in junior, or started walking with God when I was in junior high or high school. And so when she passed away, I found this in her Bible, this prayer. Father, I cannot comprehend who you are. My mind cannot grasp all the things about you, but I do know that you worked a miracle in my life as I look back on my life. You not only answer our prayers, but you go above and beyond what we ask for. You have blessed my family. My son and daughter are believers. Their spouses are believers. All my grandchildren are believers. This is a miracle because of the background that I came from. I don't know how you did it. My prayers are puny, but you put it all together. I thank you for how you worked in my children's lives and their spouses' lives. They are actively reaching out to the people around them and doing your work. No person would be able to work all this out, but you were able to do this. Thank you for blessing my life. That's the kind of legacy you can have for your children. You're praying for them. God can do it. He can put it all together. So recapping, our kids are a gift and a reward. We have an important role. Show them who God is, model that spiritual champion, and train them according to their way. Keep God in the picture and cling to his promises. And hopefully that's renewing your vision for what you're doing as parents. We could discuss this, but I think we've gone long. Maybe as, you know, you're sitting, because I don't know what time this meeting is over. But maybe if you have a little more time, you can talk about this among yourselves. What are the different things you could do in different stages of the life to work toward a spiritual champion? But here are the resources that I used. Well, why don't I pray for us? Lord, thank you so much for who you are and that you give us so much and we can depend on you for everything. I pray for each of these parents in this room, God, that you would encourage them, that you would inspire them, that you would give them everything they need to parent their kids to be spiritual champions. And we know, God, that you are the ultimate parent. You can parent us. If we've never been parented in a Christian home, you can parent us, and you can help us pass that on to our kids. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.